It's time for Mech Break Weekly. I'm here with Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie. We'll talk about the upcoming Worldwide Developers Conference and what we know about iOS 8 and OS 10 10.10 coming out at WWDC, perhaps. We'll also talk about new iPhone designs, those surprising memos coming out of the Apple-Samsung trials, and a long-awaited iPad app is finally released. And no, it's not Microsoft Office. It's all coming up next. Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 397, recorded April 8th. 2014, rejecting photos in bed. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak. And by 99designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 280,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/MBW to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. It's time for our Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers your Apple news, everything going on in Cupertino, with two of the best experts on the subject, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com and his secret lair in beautiful Quebec.
I was at the airport this morning, Leo, getting my Nexus interview, and they took four shots of my retinas. So I'm hoping they just recorded the pictures and didn't inject stuff.
Nexus, we should explain, is Canada's name, not for a phone, but for the ability to quickly come and go across the border.
Yeah, it's harmonized with global entry.
Global entry is what we call it here. Do you get then to avoid things like taking off your shoes in the security line?
I think so. They gave me that. They were very careful. I said, most people misunderstand what Nexus is. We have to explain it to you. You can't bring friends. You can't bring fruit. If you update anything, you have to tell us or we'll lock you away in a little room.
Now bring fruit.
No, there's a long list of things you cannot do or you'll lose it forever.
But I'm glad to hear that you are considered by the Canadian government to be non-hostile.
Nexus worthy.
Andy Iannocco is also here. He is Nexus worthy as well from the Chicago Sun-Times. But hey, are you guys coming out for a WWDC?
I don't know yet. It depends on what they're doing for the keynote. I didn't even bother entering the lottery this year because, as like we said before, there's not much point to me being there, learning things that I can't talk about, and also preventing me from talking about things I might learn elsewhere after that. And also, it's gotten, I kind of like dropped that as even an option a few years ago, because now every single slot at WWDC, if it's taken up by somebody who does not have a plan to write an app or create a product, I personally feel a little bit guilty about that. It's perfectly okay for anybody to do that. I just like, okay, I would be going there just to have the environment, and I wouldn't be losing any money if I didn't go. So
WWDC kicks off June 2nd. There will be the usual keynote at Moscone West in San Francisco.
Everything happens at Moscone West. It's almost as if I go to like a keynote there, I almost want to like hide a go bag in the suspended ceiling above the bathroom because that way I'll just like fly to San Francisco with like no baggage, go to whatever keynote for Google or Microsoft, just grab this bag that has my laptop, my iPad, a tie and a jacket, and a change of shoes, and I'm done.
I'm here. I'm back. Yeah. In fact, they got to put a plaque up there. You think what was announced there?
Because we had GDC 1 week, Macworld the next week, although that ended up being at North, not West, and then Build the next week, and we could have just swapped bags for 3 weeks.
Yeah. Google's announcements are there. Apple's going back. I mean, many a Steve Jobs keynote at Moscone West, I think the 2007 iPhone announcement was there.
Yep.
It's a big haul. Anyway, Apple set up a lottery, as you mentioned. This is what everybody's doing now. Google did the same thing. For years, they were both kind of – saying, hey, we sold it out in 2 minutes. We sold it out in a minute and a half. We sold it out in 30 seconds. We sold it out in 1 second. So finally, they said, oh, they're both doing, I have a feeling there was a call. Can we end this now and just have a lottery? Okay. Because who needs the bragging rights? And then Monday, they sent out invitations to randomly selected developers. If you won the lottery, you will have received an email.
Yeah.
But you have till April 14th to execute. And then your ticket goes to the next person in line.
And I know a lot of people who had just everybody on their team enter because they were never sure who was going to... They wanted as many possibilities as possible. Right. And they got two or three, and they're going to release one or two of them back to the pool because they only really need to get one or two people in there.
Yeah. Well, do us a favor. Send one person.
Like Andy said... And what's even better this year is they announced in the press release they're going to be streaming State of the Union and the Apple Design Awards live. And they're also getting almost every session up on the same day. So unless you need the labs, like if you have to go there and talk to somebody about a framework or get a design review, almost everybody can be well served without a ticket this year, which is fantastic.
And because it's a live stream, we will be covering it. Well, even if it weren't, we'd be covering it.
It's really becoming a little bit like TED now, where... there are people who spend a lot of money and go to a lot of trouble to go there, but the purpose of that show isn't to serve the people at that show. It was to is to create the library of content that many more people are going to be able to take advantage of after the show is over.
Yeah, it's exciting. I look forward to it. Now, this is there are usually, and they have been in the past September and October, product announcements, but this is the one scheduled one ahead of time. Mm-hmm. This is they're talking to the developers. It seems to me this is a fairly important one, the first one of this year. What will there be announcements? Will there be product announcements?
Years ago, we got the first Retina MacBook Pro 15-inch at WWDC. Last year, we got the new Haswell MacBook Airs, and we got a preview of the new Mac Pro. So this year, if there is a Retina MacBook Air or just new MacBook Airs or 4K displays to go with that, as long as they're fairly new products, evolutionarily new products, I think there's a good chance we'll see them.
I wonder, though, remember that I know we just got iOS 7, but iOS 8 is presumably in development. We've seen a leaked... health book, which would presumably go with a wearable that Apple is maybe coming up with sometime this year or early next. Wouldn't this be the WWDC where you go to developers, and maybe you do it in private, and say, develop for this?
Yes, but you can do that without necessarily saying, here is how to support the new health band that we're going to be shipping in September. You can do that by simply saying, we've created a new set of APIs for real-world integration solutions. So if you want to monitor a certain field of real-world sensor input, here's how you open that channel. Here's how you communicate with that device. Here's how that data will be delivered to you. I'm sure that as soon as people start leaking about there's always the schedule of events that is posted, and a lot of those boxes are left blank, saying we are not going to give you the name of this until we actually start this thing up. And that's usually when you start to decode the fortune cookie about saying, well, if they are really doing a sensor suite of their only thing they could possibly be doing that for is if they are actually going to be doing a fitness band or something like that. So I'm not sure if it'll be explicitly showing their cards so much as showing the technology is going to power whatever it is they really.
And they're going to say, read between the lines. You guys are smart.
I don't think they need developers specifically for an iWatch or an iBand, because the way that HealthBook is set up, you'll probably have HealthKit underneath it, which will tie into a ton of different peripherals. Apple's not going to be able to do everything, especially not in their first generation. So they can announce HealthBook. We'll almost certainly get iOS 8 and OS 10, 10.10, at least the betas at WWDC. And that will probably have all the stuff to integrate into a wide range of health stuff, because first generation product won't do everything. They'll need to have, you know, like the Nike Fuel Band or the blood pressure reader or the sleep monitor or whatever else they want to be able to house in that system, all work with it. So they could announce the API and everything without ever mentioning the watch or the band, unless they're actually ready to sell it. And that's usually at the point in which they'll announce it.
Right. So the reason I ask all this, I'm wondering if we're going to get any tea leaves to read on June 2nd.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
But realize that there are tea leaves at the bottom of every cup of tea, and you're welcome to see whatever you want to see. So yes, you can look forward to that.
And to your earlier point, I mean, Apple absolutely does go to developers behind the scenes and say, we're working on this, sign all these NDAs, yeah. we're going to come to your house and
those people
this
were
to
not
the table.
Gonna, yeah, they're not going to leak, those people.
Yeah, and they've yeah. done that for both products they've announced, like the iPad, and for SDKs they haven't yet announced. So it's also no indication of whether it'll come or how soon it'll come. But if there are back deals, having everyone at Moscone Center is a great time to talk about it.
Remember that they're really, really good at getting people to maintain a secret. All those product launches in which, oddly enough, someone seemed to have had this product 2 weeks ago, enough time to put together a really good game demo. So, yeah, if they want to have some cool stuff third party at launch, that those people are going to be getting a lot of hand-holding, and that overture might start the first time they actually get to look at this thing encased in 2 feet of Lucite and with all kinds of random patterns printed into it so that a cell phone picture of it can be traced back to that one meeting at that one suite. That's where it's going to happen.
I want Mike Elgin, listen up, because here's what I want. I want a story. I think, you know, all of these big companies, Apple, certainly Apple and Google, have security big time, right? We know Apple's security could be like scary because of the Gizmodo iPhone incident. And we know Google, I just kind of got an insight into that because we talked to Kevin Rose on Sunday about, you know, the people protesting outside his house saying he's a parasite and all that. And he said, no, Google security's on it. I said, well, what did you do? Did you call the cops? He said, no, we got Google security. And it just kind of chilled me a little bit.
RoboCop.
I'm thinking both Google and Apple, I would love to see a story behind the scenes revealing the secrets that they must have their own police departments in effect, right? Like heavy duty stuff. You don't want to run afoul of Apple security.
I want to make a Veronica Mars reference here, and I'll just stop myself from doing
good,
it.
Thank you.
I want to go with In the Heat of the Night and say, I'm your worst nightmare. I'm a nerd with a badge.
A nerd with a badge.
To your SDK, though, point, Leo, if they are working on new Apple TV hardware, and if that Apple TV hardware happens to have a game store or app store, WWDC would also be an interesting place to start talking to developers about developing for the 10-foot interface and the big screen.
Mark Gurman did a nice roundup of everything we know so far about iOS 8 and OS 10, 10, 10. Oh, I like that, 10, 10, 10. Code name for iOS 8 is Okamo. Mm-hmm. Or is it Okamo? Okimo?
Okamo, I think, like the song.
It's a song?
No, but Apple likes ski resorts for all of their iOS betas. They're always named after ski resorts. So Sochi was 7.1. So
you're kidding, really?
Yeah.
So that's to give the developers the illusion that they're actually able to get away and have fun.
Well, it's a way they can talk about it in internal emails without having to name specific products.
Right. So the only thing we have, I guess, is that image, those images from Healthbook. And we've seen a lot of that. We've talked about that before, the activity monitor, the emergency card, and so forth. We've heard that there will be updates in Maps. Mark says, same UI as iOS 7, but better data, better clarity, important new features. And in fact, Apple has been on a acquisition spree, buying not one, but they bought two commute databases, right? Was it Hot? Yeah. What was one of
them? But they also just hired the guy from Amazon very recently.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah, the guy who did A9 at Amazon, which was Amazon's attempt to create an Amazon a web search engine that was sitting on top of Amazon. It's very interesting. His name is Benoit.
Yeah.
Benoit Dupin or something like that. Dupin. And so they're clearly gearing up for this. They have transit. They bought two transit specialists. They'll add that. Apparently iTunes Radio will be broken out. This needs to happen. We've mentioned this before. Yeah. It's really good. But I was shocked to see it because I never launch the iTunes app on my iPad, and iTunes Radio is just, it doesn't get, I think, the traction it deserves. So as they did with podcasts, they're going to separate that out into a standalone application. It's their version of Pandora or whatever. Another significant addition, according to 9to5 Mac, being considered for iOS 8 is voice over LTE. Now, this is carrier, obviously carrier specific. All the carriers are moving away from CDMA, GSM, to LTE, but not just for data. The plan is eventually for all traffic to go over LTE, voice and data. VoLTE will be transmitted over the same kind of network that the LTE data is transmitted. Improved call quality. I presume it's kind of like VoIP, right? That it's
exactly VoIP. It goes over IP packets, and it all opens up all that bandwidth that's currently being consumed by voice, right, which is an old technology, to pure data.
So T-Mobile supports Volt. I guess that's what we call
Volte.
It. Volte.
Yeah, Volte.
I like Volt. All right, Volte. Volte sounds like an evil villain.
It might well be, Leo.
Verizon and AT&T are testing it for rollout later this year. Interestingly, that's probably when an iPhone 6 would come out. Is iOS 8 going to wait till iPhone 6?
Yes.
Okay. So it's for iPhone 6.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be backwards compatible with probably down to the iPhone 5, if not the 4S, but it'll come out. Almost always, it comes out a couple days before the new phone launches.
And this, you only get this in the Apple world. Here's a bulletin. Apple is said to be considering adding the ability for messages threads in iOS 8 to automatically be deleted.
No, it's a big problem, though, Leo. I mean, it's funny, but there's this huge problem because people will buy a 16 gigabyte or a 32 gigabyte iPhone, and they'll do a ton of picture and video messaging. And because there's no easy way to delete those, they just accumulate inside the Messages app. And because the Messages app is backed up to iCloud, they accumulate in iCloud. And then if you save them out, you now have a copy in the camera roll as well and a copy in iCloud. And it just eats away tons of storage. We have people with 3 gigs stuff in iMessage.
All you have to do is look at your usage in your iOS, and other is that. It's the cached messages, among other things. But I think that's the biggest culprit for a ballooning other.
Also, it's just a good idea to make that into an explicit part of the user interface. Given the privacy of the personal nature of these messages, that's a really good user-forward feature.
The only reason I say it's kind of typical that people make this is built into every other phone operating system I've ever used. You know, after 6 months, after 3 months, whatever, it deletes them. The auto deletion is optional, so you don't have to worry about disappearing threads.
It does underscore that Apple is really like one development team with only without the ability to focus on everything at once. It's like they can only put the spotlight on one thing, and so there are a lot of these little features that just keep getting postponed and postponed and postponed. Not because they don't think it's important or they don't care, but because their focus is now on getting 7.0 out the door. Now it's on 7.1 out the door. Now it's on making sure that iCloud works with iWork, and that really distracts them from these little fine point features that a lot of us really, really have been wanting for years.
According to Mark, again, Notification Center may be simplified. Apparently, his sources say Apple's considering reducing the notification panel to include today and notifications only. No more missed notifications. No more all notifications. Just today and notifications. Notifications, the new one, would combine all notifications with missed notifications.
It's simpler and less redundant because the current system is a little bit complex and a little bit redundant.
Yeah. And he says because they acquired Q, the app Q, last year, he thinks that some of those features from Q will be incorporated into what is Q in the Notification Center? I don't remember Q.
Don't remember either. Yeah. I looked at it when it happened, but I don't recall.
Yeah. Apple is developing versions of Preview and Text Edit. Everybody on the Macintosh is familiar with those. Optimized for the iPhone, iPad, and the iPad Touch.
This is where I start to get really frustrated because the problem they have right now is iCloud is in app jail. So if you make a document in Preview or you make a document in Text Edit, you can't edit them in iOS because there's no equivalent.
Ah.
So it seems what they're going to do is put those apps there. So you can open something in Preview that you saved on the Mac, but then to edit it, you'll have to go to iBooks, or to edit the one in Text Edit, you'll have to go to Pages. A far better, it reminds me of those things where you don't want a setting screen and you end up making an app 8 times more complicated just to avoid having a setting screen. Because in an ideal world for me, we would have a files.app, like we have a photos.app, and a documents picker, the way we have image picker. And then any app that can open a text file could just open that picker, and we could choose a text file from any app. But right now, if I write something in AI Writer, then I find out that some other text editor is better and delete it, I can never get those files back. I have to go and remember what app I wrote them in, download it again, copy and paste them laboriously over to the new app, and it's just not tenable.
Yeah, I agree completely. Apple continues to iOS continues to bump its head on file interoperability. where it's fine so long as people continue to use iPads and iPhones within the limitations of, for lack of a better word, big phone type apps. But as they keep making better and better iPads and developers keep making stronger and stronger apps for them, people really are going to be trying to use them as notebooks and deciding, why do I buy a $500 tablet plus a $1,000 notebook when this tablet is so much better at everything and it does everything for me? And so this is where you find the limitations. Things that are so easy to do on a device that has an open file system, or at least a more liberal idea of what to do with the data that's user data that's on the device, I think that this is sort of a storm cloud that's forming that is going to require a more aggressive solution than just saying we will take the two cheapest, most free, and least useful image editor and text editor that we've ever produced for any computer ever and make a version of it that doesn't really make much sense for a phone, but which now we've sort of boxed ourselves into a corner where we have to make them.
Brian Elliott in our chat room says we need a finder for the iPhone. See, I couldn't disagree more.
No,
I don't think you want to turn an app, the iPad or the phone, into a desktop computer. This is why it's a challenge, because app interoperability, you have to do it without suddenly giving the user access to a file system. So you don't want to do it kind of universally. You don't want to have documents on the desktop. You got to do it judiciously.
That's why I mentioned the image picker, because they solved this problem already. They just restricted it to media files. And if they let you put TXT files, CSV files, and whatever, and then they'll know what the app can read. The app can declare what kind of files it works with, and then that picker service can just provide those files. And that way you maintain security, you maintain the sandbox, but your files can move around as they will in the system. And I think that, you know, you don't have the file system, but you still have the elegance.
Yeah. Also, Apple's done a pretty good job of making a very simple but elegant system of just simply sharing a file out. When it's been exposed by an app that rationally has a reason to be able to deal with files like mail attachments, like documents inside of a documents drawer for a word processor app, the ability to simply say, take this file and do something useful with it, that's a useful structure. I don't think that it would be a big step backward if Apple did something that was similar to the Finder. However, if they were to create something that was like a system-level file picker, that might solve a lot of problems. Meaning, we have something that has the authority of only an app created by Apple would have to simply look into the stores of every single app that's on there, give you an overview of here's the data that you have on your device on a discrete file by file level, and then the ability to simply select a file and do something useful with it, even if it was just as useful as I'm going to drag this word processing file out of the Word folder, excuse me, out of Word space, and drag it into Pages space, and then trust that these two apps know how to negotiate and how to do that securely and successfully. We get some of that now with third party file management apps where you can just put things into its own file, the file store of this app specifically, and then that app will then handle the rerouting for you. But this is, again, a problem that's going to have to be solved, and something like a file manager might actually be a good job of doing that.
It's actually interesting, because in some ways they're going in this direction with Game Center. There are rumors. Now, they're conflicting rumors, because recently leaked screenshots, according to Gurman, showed the Game Center icon, but there have been rumors up to now that Game Center was going to go away and that the functionality would just be inside the game. And that's kind of like the same thing, which is, you know how to talk to Game Center. We don't need a separate standalone Game Center app.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same idea. We don't need a text edit app. Just anything that can edit text should be able to see the iCloud and see text files.
Also, one of the things I consistently love about Apple's thinking is that the obvious thing would be to have a file manager app that handles it, but the more sophisticated thing to do is to figure out what are users missing? What are they really asking? They're not asking for an app. They're asking for us to solve a problem for them. And can we solve that problem in a way that they haven't thought of that's a lot simpler and a lot more direct?
Let's see what else. Voice memos. I don't know. People use voice memos? I guess they do.
It's got a bad UI. They're going to fix it.
Okay. Bad UI. We're going to fix it.
Yeah.
Performance. Now, we're seeing more and more how powerful that A7 chip is in all the new mobile devices from Apple. It would be really nice to take advantage of all of that. And while we know apps don't, Apple certainly should. Improvements in CarPlay. So I presumably this fall there will be cars that do it.
Well, the thing is, CarPlay is an extension of AirPlay, but right now it's bound to the Lightning adapter for a variety of reasons, and the next generation one could go back to being Wi-Fi capable as soon as cars start getting Wi-Fi hotspots in them more frequently.
Yeah, my car has a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Yeah,
a lot of Fords do. Inter-app communication. Aha, this is what we were talking about. Apple is said to be working on and testing functionality that will allow apps from the App Store to better communicate. This is known as an XPC service. They're developing an API for apps to share data. A future photo editing app might have the ability to push the content for upload via the Instagram app. Right now, you can kind of do it in a backwards way. You can share it out to Instagram. Instagram opens, but then Instagram has access to the photo, right?
Yeah, they have a couple, like they have URL schemes and they have X callback. Apple actually ported XPC from the Mac over to iOS, I think in iOS 5 or iOS 6, and they broke Springboard into Springboard and Backboard, which would enable it to do things like headless apps and stuff like that. But they never pushed it out to developers. And iOS 7, it was hinted that it would be there based on some of the early betas, but they didn't ship it either. So it looks like something they've spent a couple of years working on. iOS 7 did give us inter-app audio, so you can now push audio files between different apps.
Right.
But nothing beyond that. So hopefully this would be an extension where almost any kind of format could do similar things to Intents on Android or Contracts on Windows Phone.
A couple of people in the chat room have been saying that what the Apple's done with audio, they've done right. So could extend that.
Yep.
That's the right way to do it.
And about time.
Yeah, it really is interesting how Apple completely owns the audio segment. That's one area where Android just has nothing as good in terms of synthesizers, in terms of all the music making stuff that's on iPad. Musicians, it's just a natural. And it's, I just don't see that on video. Android.
I mean, there's two things. One is it's self-selecting that a lot of artists like Apple to begin with, so they want to make the tools that they use. But also, one of the biggest strengths of iOS, and we see it over and over again, is the framework that Apple provides. It's just incredibly simple. Not simple, but it saves you a ton of work to use Core Audio, Core Animation, Core Graphics, and people can make these apps faster and better than they can on other platforms.
Right. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about what we think we know about OS 10, 10.10.
Syrah.
Syrah. That's a wine, not a beach. But that would not be the public name or...
No, so what happened was they originally had the big cat names, and then Apple Marketing started using those. And then the development team were like, well, you're using our code names. We'll come up with new secret code names. And they switched to wines.
No, all right. So they've been wine for a while. What was Mavericks?
I forget. One was Chablis, one was Chardonnay. They've had a whole... I'll pull them up.
Think for yourself, like, which would you rather do, make your cats tax deductible or make all your wines tax deductible?
I have to try wines. We're looking for a code name. My wine cellar is a resource for code names.
All right, so the iOS Mavericks was...
He's looking it up.
All right, so here they are. So 10.10 is Syrah. Mavericks was Cabernet. Mountain Lion was Zinfandel. Lion was Barlow. Snow Leopard was Snow Leopard. They didn't have time to make up anything else. Leopard was Chablis. Tiger Intel was Chardonnay. Tiger PowerPC was Merlot.
Oh, it really goes way back.
The first one was, Panther was the first one. Pinot.
Wow, it goes way back. So Syrah 10.10, we don't know what the official release name will be. We'll talk about some of the features you might expect in just a little bit. Are we going to see a Mac Mini soon?
I hope so. I hope WWDC.
Somebody called on the radio show this weekend and said, I really want to get a Mac Mini. I have an old Mac, and I have the monitor, I have the mouse, I have the keyboard. Why should I get anything but a Mac Mini?
I'm also curious to see if the Mac Pro styling translates downward to other desktops.
Right.
If we're going to see some nice, not necessarily a flat disk as the Mac Mini, but at least some of the same materials, the same color, and some of the same design.
Donut. I would like a donut computer.
A computer and a batting range.
Donuts. A batting range?
Batting ring. You know, you drop it onto the bat.
For warm-ups. Yeah. That's where you go when you hear the word donut? You are a baseball fan.
It's... There you go. It's Fenway America, World Series champion Red Sox. We are still a good team, at least for the next week, so please let me revel in.
Did you see Big Poppy's selfie?
Yes.
With the president. The Red Sox. Why were the Red Sox at the White House? Oh, because they won the World Series. And so they're there at the White House, and they're giving the president his own Red Sox jersey, which looked big enough, the right size for Big Poppy, but I think it might be he might
fit the entire Obama family.
Yeah, in there. You get the whole, the kids, everything in there. And then Big Poppy says, "Hey, let's take a picture, Prez." And they go like this, and it's a Samsung Galaxy Note 3.
Sponsored Samsung.
Turns out, yeah. So the White House says, we don't want Samsung to use that picture in their promotional materials. That's not okay. Mm. The picture that got distributed was not the selfie, but the picture of the selfie being taken, just as it was with the Ellen DeGeneres Academy Award selfie. It's all about getting that Samsung Galaxy Note 3 in the picture.
Samsung has an advertising budget, but the White House has first strike capabilities. Yes, so I'm sure they'll work it out equitably.
Don't forget who carries the football.
But don't you love that, like, Romulan scale thinking? People realize that people are taking selfies now. A lot of these people are famous, and people will be having their picture taken, taking selfies. Let's put free phones into as many famous people's hands as possible.
Yeah.
Well done.
Now, apparently, according to the New York Post, which is not exactly a journal of record, the president is considering banning all selfies at the White House.
Press secretary had a statement yesterday. I saw him doing his stand-up last night and saying, yeah, we're... Also, there's the problem of they don't want to encourage people to simply put their arm around the president and pull him close to them.
Exactly.
And anybody on that stage has probably been vetted, but that's probably something that makes people nervous.
I don't think, you know, Brock looked pretty happy there to be posing with Ortiz. It didn't seem like he was unhappy.
Bobby wanted a picture taken with me. I would be very happy about that, too.
This would never have happened with C.J. Craig still in office.
You're talking about the West Wing now. That was a West Wing reference.
No selfies back then.
They didn't have selfies. They didn't have camera phones.
Didn't have the internet.
And it didn't President Obama do a selfie with the fairly lovely Prime Minister of Denmark and David Blair of England, who is less than lovely?
Is that called a prezi when you have?
It's a prezi. I'm doing a prezi. Wait a minute. Now, I don't. Okay. Immediately after Ortiz took the picture, someone, later believed to be Ortiz, yelled, "Cha-ching!" Okay, that's going a little too far.
That's Ellen at the Oscars.
Case that really gave it away.
Cha-ching! Really, really, Big Poppy.
Did he make the cha-ching hand movement too? Because that would have.
I'm calling Samsung. That's got to be worth something.
That's worth two Teslas, at least.
That's fine, because I there was a story in the Herald the other day about how not his bigger yacht, but a smaller yacht, the helicopter on that yacht needs to be refurbished.
See?
So he's kind of hurting for money. So
yeah,
you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
That's smaller yacht.
Makes perfect sense to me. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com. We love Audible. We are big Audible fanatics here. Every time we get together, we talk about, what are you listening to right now? What's your book? I was mentioning, in fact, right before the show, I'm listening to Dogfight. Fred Vogelstein's amazing story of Apple and Google, the creation of the iPhone. You probably saw the excerpt in Wired Magazine of the iPhone demo from the point of view of the radio engineer, the guy who did the radios in it. And, oh, my gosh, it's such a good book. There's so many great books, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, classics, scary books, funny books, Philip K. Dick books. It's all at audible.com. Actually, science fiction at Audible is incredible. And much of it, they are producing themselves with their Audible Frontiers program. I just downloaded Flash Boys, the new Michael Lewis book. I'm going to tell you how you can get a free book. But before I do, why don't we ask Mr. Andy Anako what his current choice is. Oh,
I have two recommendations this week, both in honor of Letterman announcing his retirement last week. I admit that I have no knowledge of how TV works. I have no understanding of it. But boy, is it interesting to read a well-written book about how a big decision like replacing Leno with Conan O'Brien works, and how the ripple effects go, and how dealing with an underperforming Tonight Show and swapping out Leno back into place, how that works. Bill Carter wrote a great book called The War for Late Night that's available on Audible. That, man, he talks to everybody who works in late night about, really, how did that happen? How was it allowed? How was Why was NBC so sure they needed to get rid of Leno and replace at the top of his game and replace him with Conan? How did Conan O'Brien's people somehow manage to create a contract that said that you're not guaranteed 11:30 start time? We just have to call the show the Tonight Show. He's talking to Seinfeld. He's talking to Letterman's people. It's such a complete picture of how one interesting industry works. And the people who, at the end, despite the fact they're gambling with hundreds of millions of dollars, just simply have to make the best decision they know how to do and then trust that everything will work out okay. So it's just a really wonderful drama. And also it just teaches you a little bit about how a different industry works. The other one is a book called I'm Dying Up Here, Heartbreak and High Times in Stand-Up Comedy's Golden Era. This is a book about written by a stand-up comic who was very active in the Comedy Store in L.A. during the 70s. And he writes this memoir about what the Comedy Store was like during the 70s when Letterman was a daily fixture, Leno was a regular fixture. All these huge name brand people were going out to L.A. to try to figure out the next step of their comedy careers, which was, of course, going to probably wind up going through the guest chair of The Tonight Show at some point. It's less about the business and more about the personalities and the drive of certain people. And it's also really, really interesting to see the Letterman personality and the Leno personality and where they were in the mid to late 70s and what they thought of each other and what their kind of work style and approaches were like.
Look at Leno's hair. Wow. There's Andy Kaufman. I can't wait to read this. Gosh darn you, Andy Iannacco. Every time you come on this show, I use up a credit. And I am down no credits. Fortunately, those of you listening can get this book for free right now. I'm going to give you credit. All you got to do is go to audible.com/MacBreak. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's the book of the month account. This is the most affordable way to get Audible books is have a subscription. You get the book or credit toward a book every month. And by the way, there are two credit books. 99.5% of all the books, and there are 150,000 books, are a single credit. But I want to warn you, if you want to go there, for instance, to read Game of Thrones, which you should be doing, many of those are two credits because they're so long. Mm-hmm. This one's not. And you can get it for free. Subscribe. You don't pay anything for the first 30 days. You can cancel in that time. Pay nothing and keep the book. You also get the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal as part of your subscription. Another good reason to subscribe. I am a big fan. Andy's a big fan. Paul Theriot, Chad, we were talking the other day about audible.com/MacBreak. You know, doesn't look like they have the night shift. Is it? Wasn't that the book about the Leno Letterman?
I think it was actually called The Late Shift.
Late Shift. Maybe they have that. If you search by the wrong name, The Late Shift was the previous one, and the Letterman was involved.
I hope
yeah, they have it. One. No, wait a minute. They do have it. Is this it? No, that's not it. I think they don't have it.
I don't think. I just look for.
They have the nudist on The Late Shift. That's Poe Bronson's very funny book about Silicon Valley, which I hadn't thought about in years. Wow. So anyway, audible.com/MacBreak. The Late Shift. Yeah, I read that in paper years ago. What a story. I love that. And I'm so sad about Letterman. Did you see Keith Olbermann's beautiful tribute to David Letterman?
Yeah, and I'm glad it's not often that someone gets to like hear their own eulogy. And boy, that was like what was like Thursday and Friday was everybody's like their tributes to Letterman and his legacy and the history and their personal connection to them. That honest to God, when I first saw like that he was a trending topic and saw some of these things, like, oh God.
Oh, what's happened? Yeah. Yeah. But no, just retiring. I can't imagine what Letterman will do without that pulpit
night. Unlike Carson, he has a wife, he has a kid, he has hobbies that are that connect him to other people. So, and plus, he has $500 million. So,
yeah. Dave, if you want to do podcasting, I can't guarantee you money, but I can guarantee you happiness.
He'll just follow the Grand Prix circuit, just fly city to city.
Apparently, that's what I learned from Olbermann's story is that he's a big F1 fan. Didn't know that.
Part owner of Letterman Ray Hall racing team. He won the Indianapolis 500 like 6, 7, 8 years ago. And if you ever have this idea that like Dave has just become this grumpy old man, get video of him like after his racing team has won the Indianapolis 500. That was like his the top of his head was almost about to come off because his smile was meeting in the back.
Well, he did grow up in Indianapolis. I guess it's not unusual that you might get a little passion for motorsports in that city. Moving on to Syrah, OS 10.10.10. They should release it on October 10th, I'm just saying.
Double 10 day. Taiwan will be thrilled.
It will be the successor to Mavericks, obviously. I've lost track of the TikTok cycle. Mavericks is a big release, right? So would expect a smaller release on this one?
I don't think it works that way anymore just because the year-by-year schedule is brutal. And also when you add iOS 7 into the mix, it took so many resources away from them that I think they just focus on whatever feature set they want to deliver now and they'll all be roughly similar.
Well, if you thought iOS or iOS, as they say, 7 was controversial, Syrah, Johnny Ive, has been leading a significant design overhaul for OS 10. And the new design will be the operating system's cornerstone new feature. We don't know what it's going to look like, but Johnny's got his hand in it.
That rumor worries me a little bit.
Scares the hell out of me.
Look how much Microsoft isn't like Apple, but look how much failure they have had to get people to accept Windows 8.
Yeah.
Last week at Build, most of the announcements about Windows 8 were about how, okay, we are rolling back about a third of the things that a couple years ago we told you were the signature features of Windows 8. Windows users are a lot more intractable than Mac users. Mac users are more open to change. But nonetheless, if you remember how badly a lot of people reacted at iOS 7, and they really didn't have a choice but to upgrade, and they had to go up and upgrade, and a lot of people are still not very happy with it. So if you take the operating system that people know and love and rely on, and if you make changes that aren't immediately tactile as an improvement of what went before, you're going to have a lot of people who might be looking at Windows 8 now and saying that, well, look, if I'm going to have to switch to something that I don't really like, I'm not really familiar with, I may as well go for something that I don't really like, not familiar with, that costs $500 less in a laptop form.
Yeah.
So I'm not predicting doom. I'm just saying that it's an interestingly gutsy thing for them to do, to really severely monkey with the Mac operating system, if that's what they're doing.
Is it? You know, there was a big brouhaha over 7. iOS 7.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is that this was always in the cards. It's just, again, they had so much to do with iOS 7, they couldn't do it at the same time. Otherwise, we would have seen them, you know, the redesigns happen simultaneously. But there's a couple things to remember. One is that it's a big halo product. So people go from iOS to OS 10, and Apple spent a lot of years trying to make it not identical, but at least familiar to people who make that switch. And they're going to want to keep maybe a little bit of that familiarity. I think we can all take solace that Apple really understands that OS 10 and iOS are separate things with separate requirements. But I think we'll see large principles like the deference, the clarity, and the depth sort of play through. A friend of mine, Dave Wiskus, did an article for Macworld saying iCloud.com could be a hint as to where they go. But I think what we'll really see is a version, not of iOS 7, but of that same vision applied to the realities of the Mac.
Am I correct that 10.10 is binary for 10? I think it is.
Well, I will say that if they released 10.10 on 10.10, then 10.10.10 would be 42. The answer to the question.
I think 1010 is 10 in binary.
I hope John Syracuse is listening.
Am I wrong? No, I'm wrong. That's wrong.
I do agree with what Renee is saying about the general attitude towards streamlining and fixing Mac OS X. The nature of my concern is that my personal preference is that I think that they kind of Sistine Chapeled iOS with OS 7. They did a little bit too much scrubbing and a little bit too much cleaning, and they left something that really isn't as clear as what they took away. So if they were to take a device that, you know, I use with a really big screen, 13 inches minimum, 25 inches, 24 inches sometimes, and they simply are going to be removing what they see as superfluous interface and gloss. And as a result, they make it harder for me to set this up the way I like it and to navigate my way around it. Just visually anchor myself. Here's the task I'm doing. Here are things that are not so important, but they're still in my frame of perception. That could be a problem. It would be a much longer adaptation process than it was for iOS 7.
But there's still felt there, Andy. They have to get rid of that felt.
No more felt. No more stitching.
Damn it, that's my desk blotter, Jody. Put it back. If it's on the computer, you can mess with it. If it's in my house, leave it alone.
Yeah, they didn't have time for Game Center last year, much to many people's chagrin. Still there.
Except for that milk, you're right. It is a couple days past the expiration date. You can throw that away, but give me my desk blotter.
Apparently, they've been testing features like Siri on the desktop. That's good. compatibility between AirDrop on the desktop and AirDrop on the iOS. Seems like that should have just been there, but no.
So the thing with AirDrop, and it's an interesting story, is that they did it, and Steve Jobs said, too complicated, not going to ship this. Did it again, Scott Forstall said, too complicated, not going to ship this. So they went back and they made an entirely new version of AirDrop that would satisfy the simplicity requirements, but it was no longer compatible with the Mac version, with the theory being that now they have to go back and rejigger them for compatibility. But they gave them the same name to add. So it's future compatible, but it's confusing in the present.
Hey, Bluetooth file transfer still works.
You gotta wonder how many people were bit by that. I knew this because I think you told me this, Renee, some time ago. Yeah. But how many people have tried to share to an iPhone using AirDrop from a desktop and going, well, it just won't work. I don't understand.
It's not working. Bring them closer. Tap them.
Think how much wasted time there is.
And it's the most frustrating type of feature because this is something that I was going through just last week when I was using Fire TV, where it's like, okay, so now let's try streaming my Amazon Music library. Okay, I don't see an app for it. Okay, well, it must be on the App Store. Yeah,
but no, there's no app for it.
There must be a settings for it. Because it's such an obvious feature. You will not believe that this feature does not exist. You just assume, oh, I must be an idiot. I just can't find it.
Yep.
And then you find out that, no, it is not possible to use this banner feature that would be so useful between these two devices, but no, it's not ready yet.
Well, this is worse because Steve said, let's make it simpler. It's too complicated. But what could be more complicated than having two incompatible features with exactly the same name?
Yeah. And the debate was that if they change the name later, it's confusing. But, you know, at least people in the present would be not confused.
And I would bet that that's killed AirDrop because enough people tried it, didn't work. They go, well, AirDrop doesn't work. And that's it.
Although, I mean, there's the amount of iOS devices versus the amount of Mac devices means that's a smaller subset of their users who get that problem.
That's what's depressing, really. Okay, so hardware. Apple seems to be readying, according to some rumors, a 12-inch MacBook Air. We talked about that last week, thinner and lighter. As you mentioned, Renee, Apple has unveiled laptops at WWDC. So perhaps we'll see something there. You think we might see a mini? A donut? I mean,
it's about time. I mean, Haswell is there. If they have enough chips, they had to redesign it because it was based on the previous generation MacBook, not the current generation MacBook. But I would love to see that. I'd love to see it have the same kind of PCI-based memory and storage that the new Mac Pros and the new MacBook Pros have. I mean, that could be an amazing little machine if they just modernize it.
Yeah. And does anybody want to take any bets that it will not be available with spinning hard drives yet?
Yeah.
That they're going to try to make something more like an Apple TV in profile and in an unassuming presentation.
Fusion drive, maybe?
I don't know. It depends. It's like sometimes you just worry about... You think about how much of Apple's game plan is that this is a feature that people want and people need, and we also have to make this price point because the Mac Mini is the most affordable way to get into the Mac ecosystem. On the other hand, they really are very driven by their own philosophy, which is it's not arrogance. They simply have a belief that this is the way you should make computers and that they're willing to sort of shuck off a certain percentage of users, I think, if it means that they're going to be making a better, stronger product that makes more sense for them. And if they could make a Mac Mini that doesn't seem like the boring $500, $600, $700 headless Mac and looks like this super sexy hot plate of creativity, to get that sort of low profile means that we are going to make it just thick enough to accept an Ethernet adapter, but not much more thick than that. Then I believe that the argument of sticking strictly to solid-state storage would win the day.
Yeah. I want to do, and I mentioned this before, I'm serious. If they come out with a new Mac Mini, we're going to do a blindfold A-B comparison between the Mac Pro and the Mac Mini And if I can't tell the difference, then one of our editors gets the Mac Pro and I sit there with a Mac Mini.
Nice.
But you know how I'll know the difference? Because the Mac Mini doesn't reboot spontaneously every few hours.
You don't know that yet, Leo.
Yeah, maybe. That's a feature.
Maybe that's a new feature of the new design.
Feature. I gotta call Apple.
They don't want you to get those same problems you get by sitting in an airline seat for 3 or 4 or 5 hours. By forcing this machine to reboot once every couple hours, yeah, it forces you to get up, walk around.
That's exactly what I do. Pound my desk. Things like that.
Clear your throat by yelling.
Yeah, and I gotta call Apple because, but you know, it's one of those things where you kind of keep hoping. Oh, it's probably just this. The relay switch when you remove this. Maybe I keep thinking, because I know it's intermittent and I'm going to take it to the store and they're going to say, well, it works fine for me. And I'm going to take it home and then it's going to do it again. But it did it yesterday. I am just doing stuff, normal stuff, not heavy duty stuff. And the thing goes, it shuts down, bong, boops. And I replaced the RAM. Remember, we thought it was the RAM stick. I don't know what it is now. I think it's
Apple Store.
Yeah, but you know, I'm going to go there, and they're not going to have it happen to them.
10.9.3.
They're going to blame me.
You just wish there were something like a flight recorder on these things. I'm not just talking about the console logs. I'm talking about a separate thing with separate CPU that just simply records your string of curses and the noises and smells.
Well, I do send every time, you know, it says you had a crash, would you like me to report it? And then I type in the comment, it did it again, really loud. But I don't know if anybody reads that.
they use that just for internal fixing their own problems. It's not for, I mean, it'd be great if there was some way that as soon as the crash reports reach a certain threshold, you get a sort of Samaritan phone call from your local store saying, hi, turns out, looks like we've been getting 19 Grand Mall crash reports a day for the past 4. You want to come in and we'll give you a cup of coffee and we'll take a look at what's going on. And we promise that if it doesn't happen while it's in the store, we will believe you by the veins that are still pulsating out of your forehead, I'm sure.
Well, and then, it's just me, but I know they're going to say, well, you know, maybe your power isn't clean. We want to test that, blah, blah, blah.
The accelerometer has determined that you're hitting the keyboard really hard in this crash log report. We'd like to get you a donut.
Gold-plated interconnects.
You know, they said, well, are you using, because the last time I called them, I said, well, are you using a powered hub? Yeah. Well, you better disconnect that. So I did. Still happens. Are you doing it? So here is a, from Cult of Mac in Polish, a suggestion for the new Mac Mini. Make it look like an Apple TV, just thicker, thickerer.
There's a tiny donut mock-up somewhere, too.
Is there? So the donut, you weren't making that up? There actually is?
Someone mocked up a Mac Pro. If you cut it down to Mac Mini size, and it looks like a little black donut. Darth Vader's beret.
The difficulty is that you can't stiff people on connectors. So one of the nice things about the Mac Mini is that you don't necessarily have to buy a hub because it has so many USB ports.
Right.
It has the full-sized Ethernet. You don't have to buy a dongle for it. I think that if they decided to get that aggressive about it, they can make the, oh, well, we've given you 2 Lightning connectors. You don't really need any other ports. You just simply buy a dongle for whatever you need. I'm sure they know they couldn't make that fly, and I don't think they'd want to make that fly. Because, again, if you're walking to the Apple store with $700 to spend on a Mac Mini, you don't want to have to come back and spend another $200 or $300 tomorrow. You're looking for something like a conventional desktop computer that looks like an Apple product.
And it's got HDMI, which a lot of people love, too.
Apple's future senior vice president in charge of retail sales is now a dame, by which, and that is not a sexist comment, my friends.
Nope.
Angela Arendts has become a dame of the British Empire today for her work at Burberry, where she revitalized that classic British brand. Can you show this?
Royal Tartan.
She made tartan cool again. Unfortunately, the Queen will not be in attendance at that, or was not in attendance at that event, which was yesterday. Instead, the government business secretary, Vince Cable.
Didn't even get a member of the royal family?
That is order, the order, worst. Order, order,
Bill order Gates got Jersey. The queen.
Mom, I've got good news. I'm a dame of the British Empire. Here's the bad news. They're not going to put a sword on my shoulder, give me a crown. The queen's not going to kiss me and put a thing around my neck. Vince Cable is going to shake my hand. The government's business secretary.
Come on down to Vince Cable, pre-owned Honda, right off the 121. Just look for the guy with a snake on his face. Open until late on Thursdays.
You're going to be a dame, but yes, minister is going to give it to you.
And that's another thing. If you become an OBE as a man, you get to be a sir. Mm-hmm. And then they call you, you know, Sir Sean Connery or Sir Johnny Ive. She has to be Dame Angela Ann Arons. That does not sound good. I'm a dame. They need to come up with a better name.
I don't know. You get Dame Judi Dench.
Dame Judi. It should be Surette.
If you can be on the same hotel suite lobbies as a Dame Dench, I think you're pretty good.
Surrey. Dame Dench. All right. You're right. We don't know when Arons will leave Burberry to take over the helm at retail sales at Apple. They said this spring. The Daily Mail says this month. But we don't know.
Apple has to ship something in the spring.
Yeah.
Imagine the first big meeting in which Johnny Ive just has to sit there icy as he sits across the table from someone who's wearing plaids and patterns.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's a good point. They have their own knight's table at Apple, or they won't sit with the commoners.
That's right. They've got a dame and a sir.
Yeah.
We knights are going to sit over here.
I understand that Johnny parks his horse in the handicap spot, doesn't even care.
That's not licensed.
He gets a new horse every 6 months. Yeah. Our show today, we're going to talk a little bit about the Samsung-Apple lawsuit, round two, and some juicy stuff in it. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about Squarespace, the greatest place to start your next website. We love Squarespace. I know we talk about it all the time. I feel very close to the guys. I've been out there many times. I just think they really do a great product. And if you're looking for a website that is, you know, beautifully designed, state-of-the-art, it's hard to tell. You know, when you go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button, you'll see 25 templates. And you might say, is that all? Well, that's just the beginning. Those templates are merely a starting point. In fact, if you select one, you'll see a list of sites that use that template, and they all look different, and that's the beauty of it. You don't have to be a web designer. Somebody said, you know, I went to Squarespace, and those templates, they all have pictures in them. They're so visual. I don't like it. You know what? This is modern. This is what people do on websites now. They put pictures. It's an amazing thing. They're all mobile responsive. Yeah, they look different. You know, every time I squeeze the screen, the site went to a different site. Yes, it automatically responds. When you upload an image, they upload and create 9 thumbnail images for you. Just gorgeous stuff. And by the way, all the templates are e-commerce enabled. That's nice. They're all mobile responsive, so they look good at any size. You've got great support. It's very easy to use. You won't need to be a coder to use this. Although they do have a good beautiful developers platform. But if you need help, they've got a 24/7 help right out of their New York offices, live chat and email support. Plus, the newly designed customer help site has easier access to self-help articles, video workshops. They're always getting better. Always improving things like that logo creator tool, which is so sweet. It all starts at just $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name when you sign up for a year. Those mobile apps like the Squarespace Metric app for the iPhone and the iPad, which allows you to check your site stats, page views, unique visitors, social media followers. The blog app, which lets you update posts, but also monitor comments on the go, even change layouts from within the app. They're so good. Squarespace.com. Here's what you do. You go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button, and play with it. Import your content from your existing sites. Mess around with it. Get a sense of what it can do for you. And you don't need to give them a credit card. You don't need to, you know, you're going to give them an email address in case you forget the password. That's about it. If you decide to buy, do use our offer code MacBreak, and you'll get 10% off, and they'll know you heard about it on MacBreak Weekly. $8 a month. That's amazing. Squarespace. A better web awaits. And it starts with your site at squarespace.com. We had Liz Gaines on Sunday on Twit, and we were talking about this the new Apple Samsung trial. So the previous trial was what about trade dress hardware? The new trial is about 5 software patents that Apple says Samsung has violated. It's the same ones, you know. It's the be able to click a link in a messenger or an email that would dial the phone or go to a website. You'd think that I don't know how you could patent it. Well. because our patent system's broken. Swipe to unlock, things like that. So Apple's going after Samsung, and really by proxy after Android, after Google. But one of the things that's fun about these is the discovery, which we're in right now. That's where both sides get to ask the other side for documents. Unless the judge seals those documents, they're public. And so we're so Liz wrote an article, the six juiciest documents from this week's Apple-Samsung trial. There's the Super Bowl email. Steve Jobs laid out strategy bullet points, including a holy war with Google, the plan for the future. Phil Schiller's email during the Super Bowl, in which he says, I watched the Samsung Super Bowl ad that launched today. This was from the 2013, from last year's Super Bowl. It's pretty good, but I can't help but think these guys are feeling it like an athlete who can't miss because they're in a zone. While we struggle to nail a compelling brief on an iPhone, that's sad because we have much better products.
That whole exchange is just terrifying to read because you see you see the ad company's response to it and you're reading, oh, don't say that. Oh my God, don't say that. God, what did you say? And then, oh dear. Essentially, the ad agency's response was not was not written carefully enough to eliminate the possibility that he would read that and think that they're saying, well, Apple's in the sort of the same sort of hole they were in 1997, creatively speaking, that you guys need to do a better job of making better products.
Ooh, ow.
And that's it wasn't that explicit, but it was a long, long, long bullet point thing of they literally compared it to Apple in 1997. And Phil just very coldly replies that the situation is by no means different. We didn't have a strategy. We didn't have compelling products. We had pretty much nothing. And we were 6 months away from bankruptcy. And you could just see him like typing that with one hand while with the other hand picking up the phone and talking to other ad agencies. Oh,
shocking. It was shocking.
Steve Jobs in an email, which says, by the way, at the top of it, do not forward, but Phil Schiller forwards to Michael Chow at Apple. Their upcoming strategy meeting. And right there, holy war with Google. So we know Steve was pissed about Google, but I think he considered it a holy war. I think that's interesting. It's fun to read this stuff. And I think this is something to keep in mind, that when you do these lawsuits, that there will be this discovery and some of this stuff will be dragged up.
It's sad, but the iPhone is probably one of the most culturally significant developments in our recent history. And but for these lawsuits, Apple would have kept it entirely secret. We wouldn't know how it was developed. We wouldn't know anything nearly as much about it. But because of these patent lawsuits, we have all the early design documents, all these early memos. And I feel really sad that it took this lawsuit, but I'm really happy just as a sort of secret history of the universe thing.
That's true.
We were finding all this stuff out.
That's true.
It's the same reason why you hope that every single president or every single important presidential aide takes the time to write a memoir or even just speak into a recorder for 3 months about every detail of what it was like to be in there. Even if you then put in a safety deposit box with lawyer instructions that this is not to be released until 50 years after my death, I think that Apple is a unique company, that they have people who don't do things simply because they're chasing after a market. They do things because they legitimately believe in what they're doing and they're pursuing a point of view that is unique to them. And so I think that if these stories just are never recorded, never told, I think that I think of the people who are in the next 5, 10, 15, even 20 years who are going to be in engineering schools, who are going to be in design schools, who would love to see that inspirational treasure trove of what it was like to develop these things. And now all they know is that, well, they decided they wanted to get into the phone market, and here is the launch video, and here is Steve Jobs' keynote. Oh, well.
This is from a 2013 planning offsite for the iPhone, which was in Calistoga, just up the road a piece. And apparently Apple was a little worried about growth rates are slowing. So what is going on? The strongest demand is coming from less expensive and larger screen smartphones than our own. Plus, carriers are getting a little unhappy that the iPhone has such high market share, costs so much. It's unfriendly. And competitors have drastically improved their hardware, in some cases their ecosystem. Now, I have to say, when you have these kinds of offsites planning, it's often good to say, you know, to challenge people and say, hey, you know what? You may think we're doing great, and we are, but there's a threat. Consumers want what we don't have, which is big screen phones. Big screen phones. So somebody at Apple's a little worried, and maybe this is the kind of stuff that will lead to a larger iPhone.
Well, it's a little subtle. I mean, the point here is that Apple, and the analogy again is to the iPhone on AT&T, there'll come a point where anyone who wants one or can have one will have it.
Yeah.
And the only growth will come from going somewhere beyond that, like to Verizon. So now Apple in the last year went from 65% to 85% of the premium smartphone market. And that's pretty much anybody who wants a 4-inch smartphone or less. And if they want to go above 85%, they have to go over the, after the people who are buying premium Android handsets, primarily for the larger screens.
Now, there's also Samsung documents. Samsung apparently felt that their UI was just too robotic, not emotional enough. So they had a planning meeting in 2009 in which they went mieux. Doesn't mieux mean better in French? What does that mean in French, Renee?
Mieux, better, yeah.
Better. Mieux, which they say stands for make it an emotional user experience, creating a more intuitive and emotional Samsung mobile interface. Why are Nokia and iPhone known to be easier to use than Samsung? It's because they're not as Samsungs are not as fun to use.
They just have to hire Pacific Helm or somebody to redo their interface. Just throw money at one of those
companies. Can I
awesome
just point out, if their interface is anything related to their slides, there's a certain lack of, these are black and white. There's no images. These slides.
But isn't it, you never get to see, this is the one good thing.
It's great to see this. I agree.
Because you don't hear companies criticize themselves.
Right.
I mean, of course, that always happens, but it gives you a sense of where they think their own products are. There was also another one of the bombshell documents from, I think it was last week or the week before, it might have been last week, was Steve Jobs, a draft outline of one of his all-hands meetings. In which he talks about, in which there are a couple of line items that are about here areas in which Android has actually surpassed us, like notifications and interact communications was also one of those things, where you again, it's nice to see that these are the problems that they have on their own radar too, because unfortunately at this sort of scale you can't afford to have Nokia particularly say things like here is where Windows Phone has been falling down for us and here's where we failed and here are things we need to fix. And also, honestly, here are things that other companies are doing that we wish we did as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get that kind of honesty
they'll never say this in public.
At a school bake sale, let alone a big tech company. But that's the only way you're going to see this sort of communication. And again, it's inspirational as well as informative.
This slide deck is from 2008 from Samsung. Samsung's strengths, now this is in 2008, do not translate well to touch. And they show all the Samsung phones, and then they show the beautiful iPhone icons. They say software is the new value driver. Focusing on hardware is a losing proposition. What makes the iPhone unique is software and services. Beautiful hardware is just a bonus. Now that's in 2008, but I think they're not far wrong. They do compete on hardware, but in fact, Samsung's software still is not as elegant as Apple's.
It's interesting, too, is people accuse Apple of being aloof or oblivious to this kind of information, but it turns out they just keep it internally.
Yeah.
They don't talk about it, but they're well aware.
Sure. If you've ever worked for a big company, things like competitive research are a very important part of what you do. You know, Apple says, in fact, you said this, Andy, Apple doesn't care what the other guys are doing. Of course they do. It may not be a driver, but they pay attention.
Well, I never said they don't pay attention to that. Saying that the fact that three other major manufacturers are coming out with a smartwatch is not going to influence their decision to make a smartwatch this year. It's certainly not going to influence their design of a smartwatch. The only thing that will really turn their head is if Samsung comes out with a new watch, or there's a new Google watch, or this new Pebble, or if this Spot watch from Microsoft from 8 years ago. If it starts selling in numbers that it indicates to them, oh, we thought that people didn't really want this. It turns out they're very eager for this. Okay, we will. That is valuable data, and we'll move up our timetable. They're definitely aware of it. Realize that I think they're even in the launch interviews for the iPhone, they were talking about how they were using every single smartphone out there and taking very, very careful note of what worked and what didn't.
So last year, Apple won $1 billion in their lawsuit. Now, this new lawsuit, they're asking for $2 billion. The five patents are addresses, dates, phone numbers, and times appearing as links in text messages. That's very convenient. So you can click on a link in a text message and it can, for instance, open a calendar entry. They have a patent called System and Method for Performing an Action on a Structure in Computer-Generated Data back in 1999. Background Data Syncing. Apple says, we own that. Universal Search. The idea that when you do a search on an iPhone, you'll get, you can narrow it down. You'll get Search Web. You know, you'll get the app that you're searching for or the song you're searching for, but you can also search Wikipedia. Universal Interface for Retrieval of Information in a Computer System. That's their patent from 2005. And Slide to Unlock, they say they own that. And finally, Auto Completion. Apple has a patent for Method System and Graphical User Interface for Providing Word Recommendations, or Auto Complete. They say they own that as well.
And can I say, doesn't this feel a lot like a high-profile divorce case where when this first hit the news headlines, you felt as though, you know what, that guy was cheating around and also flaunting it. I'm glad that this marriage is ending. And after 3 or 4 years of one side doing something to the other side responding to another way that doesn't seem like a proportional response, you've forgotten who you've decided to root for and you just want this to be over with.
Yeah, I do.
That's my take on this.
Yeah, we're the kids in this scenario. Yeah, they're fighting for custody of us, Andy.
Only they're not buying us toys to make up for emotional abuse.
I want candy. I want candy.
Why am I
affected? Disney
already?
World with our new iPads.
Do you want to talk about security patches and bugs? Apple fixes the Safari Pwn-to-Own vulnerability and 24 other critical bugs.
Yay!
You know, I don't even know if this is news anymore. This is if you're on version 6.1.3. Wait a minute, is this really... I see. Safari 6, 6.1.3, and Safari 7, 7.0.3. How do you get that? You just get it by an app? It's an app update.
Yeah, you can go to the apple.com and get it too, but it's easier to get it from Software Update.
So just run Software Update. If you haven't done it, you probably want to do that. Pwn to Own is that yearly Vancouver event where hackers all year save their favorite hacks because there is a huge payoff if you are the first to hack a platform, and they take all the major platforms. And in fact, a French vulnerability seller, it's like an arms merchant. That's not a thing you want to tell your kid. Yeah, I sell vulnerabilities.
VuePen, I am a vulnerability seller.
They sent a team to Pwn to Own, and they hacked Chrome, Adobe Reader, and Adobe Flash. Internet Explorer won $400,000.
Triumph.
I think this is not a... I like Pwn to Own. I like the idea, but there is so much money now. There was a total of prize fund of $850,000 that I think a lot of exploits, a lot of these groups are looking for exploits and then don't reveal them so they can make money at Pwn to Own.
As long as they're revealing them.
But not revealing them until...
Yeah, daddy's got 2 0 days. How many did your daddy have?
Yeah.
I mean, but you're I think that the people who are white hat enough and have a purity of purpose enough to simply say that it is enough that I've uncovered this and I need to get this out as soon as possible are not going to be the sort of people who would be swayed to, I'm going to wait for 8 months to try to win Pwn to Own. The people who are going to be swayed to do that are the people who might not have been terribly motivated to do the right thing of looking for and documenting a bug anyway. So I don't know. I share your concern. You would like to live in the sort of world where everybody is saying that we could make the internet and individual apps secure and more trouble-free.
Yeah, and not hold on till CanSec West so we can win $850,000.
What if they were to change the rules and simply say they could put something in escrow. And simply say we're going to publish that. We have basically filed a copyright claim. We filed a claim on this. We've documented it, and that gives us the ability to show it to the offended party as well.
We should win, or something. I don't know.
The difficulty is that this is like saving up all of your favorite and most gory Russian dash cam videos So you can have one event where you show nothing but gory videos.
Right.
As opposed to simply saying that, well, why are we saving this one event to show all the vulnerabilities all at once that are affecting everybody in the world? Why isn't it enough to simply reveal that, okay, this team won this team won that? And also, you know, they would also added an incentive to say that I was the first person to file a claim against this, and so I'm the first person to document this and share it publicly.
Here's a bug I don't know anything about. Maybe you can straighten us out here, Renee, from 9 to 5, Mac Mike Beasley. An iOS 7 bug that allows anyone to disable Find My iPhone and bypass activation lock even if they don't have a password.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bad bug. Apple has to fix it. The good news is if you have either Touch ID or a passcode on your iPhone, you're safe because part of the bug requires you to reboot the phone. And when you reboot the phone, the passcode will come up. So they have to have physical access to your phone. They have to be able to get to the settings. They have to be able to do a couple moves, then reboot it, and then do some more things. So as long as the reboot brings up the lock, you're fine.
So it's not for a 5S if Touch ID is turned on.
Yeah, so it basically Touch ID forces the passcode. So as long as you have the passcode
right. Set
up, you're fine.
So in fact, the video that they show is for an iPhone 4 and 4S only.
Yeah, and again, if you lock those with passcode, you're also fine.
Okay. So what you're saying is the four-digit code enough, or does it have to be a long? Okay.
I mean, they could brute force it if they have physical access to your phone, but it would take a while. I mean, the key thing is that it requires a reboot to work. So if you can stop them from gaining access after the reboot, you have much less to worry about.
Okay. Yay. Nothing. In other words, it's not really a serious issue.
No. I mean, it depends how high a value a target you are.
Right.
Every single time there's been a security almost every time there's been a security exploit against an iPhone, it has always been about if I know you and I know that your phone is very valuable and I'm very well motivated, then yes, I can distract you long enough to get my hands on it and make life very bad for you. Most people are just worried about, well, I went to this website and now. And now my girlfriend is getting junk mail from some sort of pill distributor.
Some updates earlier this week for iWork, which is good. This is iWork on the iPad, right? For all of them. That's right, because now they're in sync, aren't they?
And they have AppleScript back. And I know Serenity Caldwell at Macworld said there's a ton of great new stuff in Pages, especially if you make ebooks. So they were restoring a lot of the functionality that was sacrificed when they ported the iOS engines over to Mac.
Right. Yay.
Another reminder not to freak out too much if Apple makes a big revision to something and a lot of your favorite features are gone. It's possible that they didn't rule them out. They're just simply, again, didn't get to them. And it'll be coming up back in a future update.
Yeah, but that's a little frustrating because basically you did a quote update that downgraded it.
But my worry is that a lot of people who might have been extremely happy with Pages, but then decided, gee, it doesn't do AppleScript now. I now have to ban it and start learning something else new. If they were able to deal with it for a few months, you might want to sit it out until at least the next dot release to see if something comes back.
Right. Former Apple executive Andy Miller is out at Leap Motion. I have the Leap Motion. We played with it. I was not overwhelmed by it. It's a great idea, and maybe in later generations it'll be more useful, but it was that little puck you put in front of your computer, and then you can wave at it and do things. Miller was the president and chief operating officer. He no longer has a day-to-day role there.
Cool demo. What does it do?
Yeah, cool demo. I don't know what's going on. A person familiar with Leap Motion, according to Recode, described tension and big clashes at the company between Miller and the other co-founders in the context of a parallel, crazy, next-generation interface product like Oculus Rift gaining steam and eventually being bought for $2 billion by Facebook, while Leap Motion faced delays and less than a stellar launch. Well, you had less than a stellar product. What can I say? You know, but that's what happens, isn't it? The dogs start fighting over the bones.
Yep.
After all that, we mentioned that Benoit Dupin is a former vice president of search technology at Amazon, has moved over to Apple. What do we know about his job at Apple?
I think 9 to 5 Mac had a piece on it earlier where they, or maybe it was Gurman's piece where it speculated that he was going to be working on some of those new iOS 8 technologies.
Gurman says maps.
Yeah. which is great, because the biggest problem with Maps is when they swapped out the Google data and they brought in the TomTom and Waze and all the other data, is they just didn't do good data aggregation, data cleansing, and data sanity. So you had all different phone formats and conflicting locations. And if they get someone who's really smart about making the data really, really clean, then that instantly improves everything else.
Right. Apple has apparently done some acquisitions. They purchased Novarus, which is a speech recognition company. The team now working on Siri. That's good.
Thank goodness. Yep.
Yeah. Novarus came out of Dragon Systems. And, of course, people I think are familiar with Dragon and Dragon Naturally Speaking. Apple has purchased them. Probably an acqui-hire, but who knows?
It's a really hard thing because Nuance is incredibly litigious and they own most of the intellectual property around the speech stuff. Google managed to get one of the co-founders who actually owned a lot of his own intellectual property.
Cohen. Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so they can do almost anything that they want while Apple has to license Nuance. So however much Apple can actually bring this in-house, it'll be better for us because we'll get better performance onboard stuff and it'll just move the technology forward so much faster for us.
Apple's looking to buy a Japanese chip maker, Renesas, I think is how you pronounce that.
It's not for sale.
R-E-N-E.
You can rent it at good prices down by the docks.
R-E-N-E-S-A-S.
Sorry. Need WhatsApp money before we even start talking.
Apple said it'd be seeking a 55% stake for almost $500 million. 240 employees in Japan expected to stay on after the transfer, which Apple aims to complete by summer. They're the world's largest producer of drivers and controllers for midsize LCDs. They have about a 30% market share. These chips determine a display's quality and performance as well as overall energy efficiency. Yeah, if you look at your battery use, you can't do it on an iPhone, but if you look on an Android, screen is everything. The screen will suck your battery dead. So this would be, I would guess, an attempt to get a lower power screen on the iPhone.
They bought Intricity. They own a share of Power VR. They like to have a skin in the game when it comes to their chip stack.
You betcha. I think that's pretty much the story, Morning Glory. Let's take a break. When we come back, your picks of the week, gentlemen. Our show today brought to you by 99designs.com, a great marketplace connecting designers with businesses that are looking for quality designs. 99designs has now 293,239 designers waiting for you to start a contest on 99designs.com. Let them know what you're looking for. Fill out their online design brief. Tell them how much you're willing to pay. Designers will compete to win money in what they call a design contest. They submit designs. You give them feedback. Together, over 7 days, you work on polishing the designs. Then you pick the one you love best. The designer gets the prize money. You get a gorgeous new design. And it works. There are currently over 2,000 contests at 99designs. Last month, designers were paid out more than $2 million. I want you to take a look at 99designs, whether you're a business looking for T-shirts, car wraps, maybe you're a restaurant looking for a better menu, better Facebook landing page, logo. With 290,000 designers at your fingertips, there's no limit to what you can get designed. We just did our great hoodies. I think that's over now. But we've got a new T-shirt, which was also in the... What we did is we did a contest for the hoodie, and we got five great... We got so many good designs, we bought five of them. They start as low as $199, by the way. So we bought five of them. And we're just going to make a variety of things. So the new T-shirt is also from 99designs, and it's great. I love it. You'll see it starting next week. Maybe it's this week. We're going to put it on sale. Prices start at $199. Your happiness is always 100% guaranteed. If you visit 99designs.com/MBW, 99designs.com/MBW, you get a $99 power pack of services for free. A power pack gives you more time and attention in the marketplace. 99designs will bold and highlight and feature your project, so you'll get nearly twice as many designs. 99designs.com/MBW. We thank 99designs for their great designs and for supporting Mac Break Weekly. Time for our picks of the week. Let's start with Andy Anatko.
Mine is a really fun app, or a really useful app for 3D development. It's called Rhinoceros. It's a very popular app for Windows, and they're working on a version for Mac. And while they're developing for the Mac, they are basically saying the Mac version is free while it's under development. You can just go to the site. You can just go to mcneil.com/rhino. I think I got the wrong URL.
Rhino3d.com/Mac.
I had a different page up here for checking up on a fact file. But yeah, you can just download it for free. Every couple of weeks, they're releasing a new development build. The old one expires. The new one will replace it. And it is a very full-featured 3D modeling and an output program. I like it. Even if it weren't a free for now app, it's the first 3D app that I've tried that I really seem to be able to understand, with the exception maybe of SketchUp. But SketchUp for me has always been about more of architectural sort of drawings, things that you can define as here is a plane. I'm going to make this plane thick now, and now I'm going to make another plane that joins it like this. For actually wanting to design a more complex shape than that, or even trying to visualize something that's in your head that you would like, you would do with clay if you wanted to deal with clay. This really has a lot of that potential. I first started playing with it because, as you know, I've been starting to get into 3D printing over the past few months, and I wanted to do things that were a little bit more complicated than what I could do with other stuff. But also, it's just fun to be able to just make models now, and I totally stink at it, which is why I don't have anything to show you. But it feels as though there is not much of a barrier between how I want to use this app and this app letting me do that stuff. This app is really very, for a development app, it is rock solid. I have not gotten it. I'm not doing really complicated things with it, but I've never gotten to crash or screw up on me once. Most of its limitations are things like extended plugin support, which are things that would be important to you if you were a Windows user of this product. There's no documentation, obviously, so you have to sort of fumble through it on your own. But there are enough tool tips in this interface. The interface is clean enough that you can pretty much work your way through it.
They have about 7 hours of video on the site, too, though. So you can
exactly.
You can get some help on how to use it, for sure.
So I mean, whether you have a real purpose for this app or whether you just want to start playing with designing things in 3D and then outputting them, this is a really, really great app to have. And it exports, and it, again, there are no limitations on what this app can do, even though it's a developer release. So you can export your 3D model in pretty much any format you want. So if you want to spit it out for a 3D printer, it will give you an STL file. If you want to export it as an object, so then you can then use it in a Photoshop project. Like if you need for a graphic that you're producing, you need to produce something that's in 3D that will match whatever's in the current scene. No problem. You can output it, then put it into Photoshop and work with it that way. Long, long list of which 3/4 of these file types I don't recognize. So that's how I know that I'm really impressed with a 3D product. If it's mostly for file formats I don't recognize.
It's not well. There's commercial and non-commercial. Is it what's the how is it free?
It's just free. You just click the download link. Go to if you're at rhino3d.com/mac.
Okay.
Go to 3D. And you will just simply run it for under.
I guess if you want to use it for commercial purposes, you have to pay for it, something like that.
Seems
like there's a. When I click the link that says buy, I see money.
Here. You see the download. The most current work in progress version is available here.
Yeah.
And click that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. 90 days after 90 days, saving and plug-in stop working. On the Windows side, anyway. I don't know how the Mac is different.
Again, this is it works. It expires when they have a new development version out, okay. But that means that there's a new development version.
Cool.
So obviously there is going to be a point at which the final development build will not work anymore. At which point you wish that you will be happy that you have exported your files. But it's not as though that's going to be a shock surprise that, oh my God, my world has suddenly collapsed around me. But again, the great difficulty, I think, with 3D apps like this is that they are so hard to develop and so expensive to develop that you can't really sell a $20 or $30 trial version of this sort of stuff. So it's really hard to really experiment with this stuff on a prolonged basis. So this is a really good opportunity if you've ever wanted to experiment with this sort of stuff, or if you have that one job where, God, I would love to be able to fix this photo or create this image. All I need to do is create a green screen image that has a fake background on it that can drop somebody into. You can just create this, knock this out in Rhinoceros and have a lot of fun doing it.
By the way, rhinoceros code names are small towns in Wisconsin. This is codenamed Wenatchee 5.0. So there you go. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
I have two because anyone listening to the beginning of the show knew that we were sort of all picking the same thing. So like Andy, I came up with a spare. So the first one is called Understudy. It's an app for the iPad. It's made by Ken Ferry, and I'm blanking on his partner's name, so I apologize. But they were both Apple engineers. Ken worked on Core OS, and then he worked on Auto Layout and then Passbook. So he's got a really good pedigree to him. And he left because he wanted to start focusing on educational apps. And what this does that's so clever is it's basically mentoring for your iPad. So what you do is you sign up for an account, and there's two books available now. There might be more. One is Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain, and the other one is the MIT Computer Sciences Program. And you start reading the book, and then once a week you're matched up with someone. It's fantastic. You're matched up with someone who's further ahead in that book, either an expert or just, you know, up to five, you know, one-fifth of the way through the book, and they help you understand what it is you've been reading. And then as you progress, you're matched up with someone who's just beginning the book, and you help them.
Oh, that's so cool.
It is really nice. It's got a full FaceTime-like video chatting service embedded in it so you can talk with the person you're mentoring. It's got a shared whiteboard, so as you draw notes and things, it's in real time between the both of you. And it's just an excellent – I saw a bunch of nerds on Twitter really excited about this because they've been dying to learn these skills for a long time but needed the peer pressure, the encouragement, the tutoring, you know, to go along with it. And this app just provides all of that.
So just a little bit about the two books that comes with. Of course, Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain is widely considered the classic on learning to draw. Just a must-have. Both of these books have been around for many decades. And so if you're interested in learning how to draw, what a great book. And then The Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programming is a book I've recommended for years as the one and only best book to use to learn how to program. You'll be learning in a Lisp variant called Scheme. Don't let that put you off. Because the point of this is to learn computer programming not as something pre-professional, like I've got to learn a language that can help me get a job, but is really learning about algorithms, the expression of algorithms, the deep fundamental underlying principles of representing a problem and solving it in a syntax. And it's just a classic, a brilliant book. But it's long and hard, and as is, yes. I mean, it's difficult, it's challenging. Having somebody to kind of mentor your way through it would be great. This is great idea. And I really like the choice of books that they've made here.
Now, it's a version 1.0 app, so there are just a few books when you start. Also, there's the network has to be built out. But the model's really interesting. It's free. It's free to try, and you get up to two hours of voice communications a month with it. It might be a week, but I think it's a month. If you pay just $5, it's unlimited. So $5 a month gets you unlimited use of the audio video sort of mentoring system as well as all the other stuff. So free to try, easy to get into. I had the great pleasure of spending some time with Ken on it. He's also the guest on this next week's Debug, so he'll be explaining all about the app and how he built it. And for the tech nerds who are really interested in it. So it's for me, it was just a really interesting app, and I'm hoping people will teach me better math with it, basically.
Yeah. Well, it's a lovely idea. You know, you already have this. I mean, both of these books you can download for free. Mm-hmm. They're out there. You already have kind of this start of, I can get a MIT level computer science education on my own. But what you're missing is that thing you get at a college, which is some mentorship, you know, somebody to kind of talk with about it. This adds that, and it's so great. I really like this. Wow.
And it's sort of very Asian in a way. Like, my grandfather learned in a trade school in Germany, and right. It was a mentor relationship. And in China, you know, the juniors and the seniors, it's always everybody's a teacher. You're learning right. from everybody. And we've lost a lot of that in North America, so outside the tutoring system. So it's nice to see that sort of becoming digital.
Wow. Chat roulette for programmers and artists.
Sort of, yeah. You're responsible. I drew Batman right away. That's where my mind goes.
And you both picked the other one.
Yeah, Monument Valley, which is just the most – it's an Escher-esque universe where you just – your wonderful little character just wanders around these dimensionally brain-twisting constructs trying to find her way to the end, and you manipulate those environments to help get her there. And it's just the best-looking, most beautiful-sounding – iPad game I've played in a long time.
Yeah, Sarah made it her pick of the week on iPad today, on our last iPad today.
It's contemplative as a game.
And the music is beautiful, too.
I cannot get the music to play on my iPad.
What?
Frustrated as hell. I'm getting no sound whatsoever.
That's weird.
Stick in the earphones because it sounds so much better with the earphones than it does than the speakers.
It's a puzzle game. And a three-dimensional spatial puzzle game.
Some people think it's really short, but if you it's upfront price, no in-app purchases, no subscription required, and it's delightful for as long as it lasts.
It reminds me a little bit of is that amazing indie game for the PlayStation 3 called Journey, which was gorgeous, had beautiful music, that you don't kill anybody. It's just beautiful.
And it's like there are that's a really great point because there are parts of this game that involve like sort of moving walkways and revolving them sometimes vertically. And the thing is, like, if your character is on one of those walkways that's rotatable, the handles that you push to make them rotate retract, as if to indicate, no, you cannot rotate this while your person is on it and make her fall and die. There are other, like, little, like, spy versus spy characters that are getting in your way. You also can't do anything to hurt these people by manipulating the environment. It really is just a meditative sort of game. I'm just really, really... It was responsible for me, like, I thought I was going to be leaving the house at 11. I downloaded this thing at 10:30, and I wound up leaving the house at about noon.
It's very pleasant.
I lost sleep. It cost me some sleep.
So I'm very pleased. I was both excited and a little depressed late last night when I saw Adobe release the press release that they had finally put out Lightroom on the iPad. And by the way, I had to fight to get this my pick because both Andy and Renee have wanted to pick it, obviously. The reason I was a little bummed is because we just completed two iPad Todays yesterday and didn't mention it in either of them, even though this is a program we've all been waiting for a long time. So I spent a lot of time in bed last night playing with Lightroom for the iPad, and it is great. Now, it's free, but you have to have a copy of Lightroom, and you need also to have a subscription to Lightroom because it uses the Creative Cloud to sync. So you'll have Lightroom on your desktop. And what you'll do is make collections. If you haven't been using Lightroom's collections features, you're going to have to learn about it. You do have to update to Lightroom 5.4, but you'll create collections of photos. And then in the process of creating the collections or after the fact, you can sync them. I gather, and maybe one of you guys can help me with this, it uploads a smaller version to the cloud, which you can then download to your iPad. So you've got the picture on your iPad. But here's what's interesting. And there are a lot of gestures, by the way, that you'll have to learn, like the double tap and the triple tap. The double tap changes what you see in the view, and you can have a histogram of the image. You can have the EXIF information of the image, and you can have the image itself. And it's a good enough, I have to say, it's a good enough quality that on a Retina iPad, you don't feel like you're losing anything. And then you can do things. So a swipe up flags it, makes it a pick. A swipe down rejects it, says don't pick it. And that syncs back to your desktop, which means you can then have them deleted from your collection if you want, deleted from your Lightroom if you want. You can also make changes. So many of the Lightroom adjustments are here. A lot of them are here. I always turn up clarity on my images a little bit. So all you have to do is slide this. Oops, let's not reject this photo. Slide the slider here. And what'll happen is I turn up vibrance often a little bit, give it a little more of that. You can desaturate or saturate. But you also have all the plugins, all the presets, or many of the presets that you might have. So let's say I want to try this in black and white. I can do that very easily. And these will be synced back to desktop. Oops, that's a little force crash there. So I'm not going to send the data of that right now. But you see, it goes right back to where you were. I have to say, I am really excited about this because I think one of the chief ways people are going to use this, certainly I'm going to use this, is as a way of kind of lean back, looking at your photos from the day or the week or the trip, rejecting and picking the ones you want, making the kind of basic modifications you would be making anyway, maybe even something more serious. You can, once you do this, you can share these out. There's the usual Apple share button. You can also, if you wish, and it's rather large, so they don't recommend it, download full copies of these images onto your iPad. And you can do a little slideshow of your images as well. And there are slideshow options So you can set how long the slideshow lasts for the kind of transition. So also a great way, and I think a lot of photographers would use this, to show a portfolio to a client or just your slideshow to family and friends. I mean, it really is, they've done, I think, a bang-up job of this. This is Lightroom. It's free for the iPad. Now, since you both were going to pick this, I'm sure there are features you'd like to highlight that I haven't mentioned. What do you think?
I like it a lot. The thing I love the most about it is just the simple act of triage.
Yes.
Which for me always works better on an iPad than it does on a desktop. I don't really know why that is. But I think it's because instinctively I'm just looking at this as a beautiful 8x10 style print.
Right.
And it either hits me or it does not hit me.
Right.
And it's so easy to simply swipe to say yes, no, 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 yes, no.
That's exactly what I was doing. And it's so nice. Yeah.
I'm not quite at the point yet where I make adjustments and trust that that's going to be, it's going to turn out exactly the way that I anticipate it's going to turn out. But again, it's simply as a way to have some of the power of Lightroom, particularly the power of having raw files available and editable and just, you know, mess around withable.
I was even importing from into iPhoto to the JPEGs just so I could do some of this. Now you're really working with a synced up Lightroom. It's just
It does also pay off some of the faith that you had by saying, oh, man, I can't believe, like, Adobe is not allowing me to own their apps anymore, and I have to subscribe to them. Well, it's kind of okay if the price is right, and if every now and then, oh, by the way, because you've subscribed, here is something that's beautiful and it's absolutely free.
Right.
Or, excuse me, no extra charge.
I think they've really done a nice job with this. You're right. There are things that you can do in Lightroom you can't do. You are on a different screen, although Apple's taken great care to make the iPad screen's pretty accurate. So I think you could do some trustworthy editing on here. They do seem to sync back to the desktop quite well.
Yep.
Renee, what has your experience been?
I love the interface. I got a chance for them. I got a walkthrough from Adobe on this, and I just love. I didn't like the Photoshop for iOS, for iPad interface.
No, that was,
I thought,
terrible.
It was impenetrable.
Yeah.
I thought this one, yes, the gestures are, you need to discover the gestures, but once you do, they're fairly intuitive. They managed to, I think, very smartly pick the features they moved over to mobile just for exactly what you and Andy said. This is the thing that you're going to do the triage on.
Right.
I've many times had a photo that I needed to use for something, couldn't get to my MacBook or didn't have it with me, and I really would have loved to have been able to do it in Lightroom as opposed to, I mean, there are good photo editing programs, but if I can round trip it with Lightroom, it saves me so much work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big fan of Creative Cloud. I have a subscription to it. I think it's terrific. I believe they still have a $9.99 Photoshop and Lightroom subscription, which is a really great value for photographers. And I like that they're becoming very clear, Adobe. For example, Photoshop is going to be focused on designers going forward. They're really clear about that. And a lot of the photography heavy lifting is moving to Lightroom, and they're making these companion apps, and they're really trying to not just service the agenda of Adobe corporate, but make things that are better for photographers, designers, and other visual professionals.
Yeah. This is, I mean, it just really is nice. Very elegant, straightforward UI. I'm extremely happy.
And they say that the low-res versions that go to the cloud and go to your iPad will, the high-res versions you have on your desktop will maintain every single change you made.
Right.
And in my experience, that's absolutely true.
Right. So, yeah, really what you're sending is a you know, it's not a bad, and these are all raw images from my Lightroom DNGs, so these are raw images that I'm sure I'm working on a JPEG of it.
It's a JPEG,
yeah. But because of the way Lightroom works, the changes you make are saved separately from the image, and so they can be reapplied to the raw image on your desktop once you get it round tripped. I think this is just, I'm so happy with this.
It also clears out the annoying thing where I've done things like Renee says, where you're at an event, you need to shoot things and post them immediately.
Right.
But you also are collecting images. And now, okay, great. So I've got one copy of this on the card. I've got one copy of this on the iPad. I imported from the card. Now I don't know what copy is the truth of this image. The ability to simply have it is all on one cloud system and just one expression of it. That's such a life changer.
I tell you, I'm going to get through my photos and get them processed a lot faster than I did before. I mean, it's just really nice to have this capability. These are all images from last October that that I had never processed.
Finally catching up.
Finally going to have a chance to catch up. So I'm just very happy. Free, but you do have to be a subscriber to the Creative Cloud. Lightroom and Photoshop together, I think, what, $10 a month?
Yeah,
that's fair.
That's a limited. It's good for a year. After that, the price goes back up to whatever the current going price is at the time at which your offer expires. Yeah, I signed up for it for exactly that reason. Yep. It was not when it was first offered. It was a little bit too expensive for a hobbyist like me. But for $10, for heaven's sake.
And Chad has a pick.
Yeah, I was actually gonna.
I don't usually mention Mac Heists, but really? Go ahead. I'm gonna let you do it.
The big reason that I wanted to bring up Mac Heist is there's a few very expensive apps in here, especially in ScreenFlow is something that I kind of want. So part of me kind of wants us to get up.
Love ScreenFlow.
So the idea behind Mac Heist is it's very similar to Humble Bundle. You pay one price. And then you get a bundle of apps. Unlike Humble Bundle, you don't get to choose your own price. You do have to spend $20. But then you get, eight apps, absolutely. And then there's a ninth app that will be unlocked if enough people get the...
And it's only $20.
It's only $20.
My experience has been I've bought a couple of these. Sometimes you get older versions. Sometimes you don't have the rights that you would have had if you'd bought the version. Buyer beware a little bit. This was controversial when it came out. I don't know. What do you think, Renee and Andy? Is it all right now?
I have developer friends who absolutely love this idea, and I have developer friends who absolutely hate this idea. Right. There's no agreement that I can find in the market for this.
All right. MacHeist.com. It is a good deal.
It's only going on for 8 hours.
And the reason Chad is mentioning is he really wants ScreenFlow, still need 2,000 people to buy the bundle to unlock it.
Right.
It's your real reason, isn't it?
It's a selfish reason. I'm not going to lie.
Fair. Yeah. That's fair. No, ScreenFlow is great and well worth it from Telestream. But normally $99, so I think getting it for $20 would be a good deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. MacHeist.com. That's it for Mac Break Weekly. I thank you all for being here. Andy Inatko, the Chicago Sun-Times, Inatko.com. Always a pleasure. He's muted. Are you muted?
Did you mute yourself, Andy?
Andy, did you?
There you go.
There.
Sorry. I just want to mention before we sign off. This week is the conference on World Affairs at the University of Colorado Boulder. It started on Monday. I had to stay in town for some family stuff, and I am boarding a plane at 5 a.m. Wednesday morning, so I could be at the University of Colorado at like 10 or 11 a.m. and start doing my panels. All these panels are really fun, really interesting, with some people who are way smarter and more articulate than I am. And it's all open for free to the public. So if you're in the Boulder area, by all means, come by. Go to colorado.edu/CWA, and you'll be able to see the complete lineup of people what we're talking about. If you're a comic book fan, see Willow Wilson, who writes that wonderful Ms. Marvel book, is also one of the speakers. I'm doing a panel with her tomorrow late in the afternoon. I think another one on Thursday. So the range of people they get for this is just amazing.
Give my best to Henry. My son's there. And I want to go next year. Tell him I'm going to go next year.
Your name has been more than put forward. It's been aggressively promoted as
thank you, Andy.
Who would be a valuable addition to the lineup.
Henry said, if you only spoke there, I would really be cool with my friends.
I'll say, Andy speaks there. Tell him you know Andy.
Oh, in that case, forget it.
Renee Ritchie, imore.com. Great to see you. I'm sure you'll be here in June. Or at WWDC. We'll see you then.
I will absolutely be at WWDC. And I think most of the stuff that we recorded at Macworld is now finally online.
Oh, good.
So if you go to imore.com/Macworld2014, we have Don Melton and Matt Drance talking about a lot of the stuff from the early days of Apple. We have Pacific Helm, Sebastian DeWitt talking about iOS 7 6 months later. And a lot of their hatred has turned into love, which was fantastic to see. So there's a whole bunch of stuff up there for people to enjoy.
Well, I love it when hatred turns to love. Thank you, Renee. Thank you, Andy. Thank you for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Tuesdays. That's Pacific time. That would be 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. We'd love it if you watch live, but if you can't, on-demand audio and video is available after the fact at twit.tv/MBW or wherever you can get your favorite netcasts. We also have a open studio, and we got 4 people here, which is nice. Great to have you guys. If you want to come and watch, you can always be here for almost any of our shows, simply by emailing tickets@twit.tv. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work, because break time's over. Mm-hmm.